carbon dioxide. Our bodies are exquisitely sensitive to it. But how do we actually detect it? We used to think that it was just down to acidity, but Warwick University researcher Louise Mee has discovered a molecule in some nerve cells that can chemically register CO2 itself.
You need to monitor the amount of CO2 in your blood. CO2 reacts with water to make hydrogen ion, so it makes the blood more acidic. And because enzymes are sensitive to that, if your blood gets too acidic, then you'll die.
So how did scientists and doctors think that CO2 was registered prior to you coming along?
So the main theory is that it's by pH. So that's measuring the amount of these hydrogen ions. And there's lots of evidence for that, and it's definitely involved. But there's more evidence that CO2 is monitored directly as well, which is what we're looking into.
And in order to do that, A, where would that happen? And B, how?
We're looking in the brain, in the medulla, that's in the brain stem. And previous results have shown that if you take pH out of it, so if you keep the level of hydrogen ions constant, but just change the level of CO2, you still get a response. So if you do this with animals, they still increase their breathing in response to CO2.
So something in that part of the brain is clearly very sensitive, not necessarily just to the pH, but definitely to the CO2 molecule itself.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did you approach that?
One protein called connexin 26 found in this area of the brain that's involved with breathing. It makes pores in the membrane. So six of these proteins get together and make a hemichannel, it's called. So because they're found in the area of the brain that's involved with respiration, my group thought that they might be involved.
And when they're just normally expressed on cells, these connexins, to make these pores, what goes in and out of those pores?
So it's quite a big hole. One kilodalton is the size of the things that get through. So signalling molecules like ATP.
And so how do you think the CO2 might interact with one of these tubes?
My group has already shown that the connexin 26 do open in response to CO2. And what I was looking for was a binding site, somewhere where CO2 could attach to the channel to make it open.
Was there anything you could look at before you embarked on that as a sort of a hypothesis? This, we know it works in this context in this way, so is it doing the same thing to this connexin?
Yeah, so that's what we started with. So we know that CO2 can bind to some molecules by making what's called a carbamate residue. So that's when the CO2 binds to a particular amino acid, which is called lysine. And these are found in plants and animals and in hemoglobin in the blood. So we started with the hypothesis that that's what happened here.
And then how did you pursue that?
We know that connexin 26, which is the one that I work on, is CO2 sensitive. But we also know that two connexins that are related to it are also sensitive. They also open to CO2. So what we did was we looked for lysines that were present in all three of these, but absent in another member of the family that we knew wasn't CO2 sensitive.
Oh, that's clever. So what that basically did is to direct your attention towards one possible part of the protein. So what did you then manipulate that region to see if you could fool the one that doesn't normally respond to CO2 into responding to CO2, and that would prove then that you'd found the real area?
Yes, exactly. So what we did was we took that out and mutated a non-sensitive connexin, connexin 31, to have those residues, and then we looked for the CO2 sensitivity of that, and as we expected, it became CO2 sensitive.
So when CO2 goes on to this lysine, what does it do to make the channel alter its activity?
So we believe it's through what we would call a salt bridge interaction, electrostatic interaction. So when the CO2 binds and makes this new residue, it has a negative charge. And then we're looking at the hemichannel, so it's six of these connexins next to each other. On the next connexin, there's a positively charged amino acid really close to the lysine, close enough that they could have an interaction. So we believe you end up with an interaction between subunits, changing the conformation of the channel, which could open it.
And have you managed to test yet to see whether this really happens in vivo, in the brainstem, or is this, at this stage, just a theory?
We've done mutational studies where we've taken away the positive end and shown that it stops the channel working. But in terms of the animal tests, they're ongoing.
And if you have nailed this, what are the implications, both scientifically and clinically?
So it's quite exciting because if we can identify this is the CO2 binding site, it makes connexin 26 a CO2 receptor. The connexins have never been suggested as receptors before. And because they have such a large pore, the opening of these channels would allow big molecules in and out of the cells. There's the possibility that connexins could be receptors for ligands that they just haven't been recognised as yet.
Louise Mee. You're listening to the eLife podcast with me, Chris Smith. Still to come, why the adult brain appears to be a lot more plastic than we first thought, and how a mouse's whiskers might be able to help blind people. First,